I'm showing I'm an alcoholic.
Should be sitting in this, but I'm just going to move this over here because I need to put my soda on this. Oh, it's good to be here. It's home. I'm home. Thank you for all the love. You know, I just got to say, when here was my plan, okay? I was coming here at 6:30 because that was early enough to help set up, and that way I wouldn't have to thank the people that set up because I'd have been one of them. Right? As it turns out, y'all started at 6, and I'm thinking I'm going to be speaking at 8 so I could just kind of mellow in, say my hellos, get my hugs, and get my vibe up, and they said, no, 7. So I had about 2 minutes to prepare, but of course, you know, I'm an alcoholic, so I've been preparing ever since the question arose, you know, not a sleeping moment, thinking of how I can sound profound, what I can say that will enlighten you, how I'm going to change your lives. So I'll do the best I can. What a great place. What a great place, man. I do want to take a minute because I want you all to just, I don't want to sound corny or anything, but I want you to just send some of your energy towards me. I know we take a minute to pray in the beginning, but I really want you to pray for me because I really want to share a message that's going to inspire and hopefully touch all of us in a different way. So if we could just take one more second, I'd really appreciate it. I heard the real alcoholic saying, 1, 2, 3. Bastards. So anyway, here I am, in from Waxhaw. I want to talk about what's current. I want to talk about what happened. I want to talk about the time of year that we're in. We just passed Hanukkah and we're rolling into Christmas. And all I kept coming to my meditations in preparation for coming, you know, what am I going to talk about that hasn't been talked about? What can I say that hasn't been said? I can only share my experience with this thing and the gifts that I've received, and that's what I want to talk about, gifts, you know? The incredible, amazing gift of sobriety that's taken for granted by me and countless others who've recovered from the seemingly hopeless state of body and mind. But it is to get to that point, it's important for me. Is there anybody new here? Let's start out with that. No? You all have time? Yeah. How you doing? Nice to meet you. I'm Sean, obviously. Anybody else new? Come back. Not sure, on the fence? Okay. So I think identification is important. I want to just kind of bring you to the pain that brought me here. And that pain goes way past the things that I lost, right? The unmanageability that we all identify with when we come here as well, here's what it looked like to me. I lost a job, I lost a car, I lost the apartment, I lost a girl, I lost a family, I lost everything as far as that stuff is concerned, you know. I lost all my money. But that in itself is not enough. I tell you, having the doors clink behind me in St. John's Mental Ward, there was a certain, I don't know, just this peace, like, okay, I'll go and I'll become a bum, I'll collect cans, and, you know, life will be easy, I'll just collect enough to drink. So things like that, losing the material things, really, it sucks. It makes life a little uncomfortable, or a lot uncomfortable, but not uncomfortable enough to convince me that it was time to stop drinking. What did that for me was this intense, deep internal pain, this feeling of absolute and utter loneliness beyond anything that I can really articulate. And you're the only people that also have experienced that. And that's why I feel so welcome and loved here, because not only have we been through that, but those of us who have raised our hands and had that spiritual experience, we're free from that. And that's where we want you to be, the guys who are just coming here. We want you to be with us. So, like most people, I started drinking when I was 9, and by the time I was 12, I was doing it every weekend, and by the time I was 15, I was drinking pretty much every day if I could. Why did I drink? This is me, my story. I drank because from the very beginning, I felt different then. I felt separated from, and life didn't seem right. seems like everybody else had the script and you all played your parts really well, but somebody forgot to hand me the script and I'm walking around wondering how to make sense of all this, and it wasn't coming until I took that first drink. When I took my first drink, it was like, not only did I have the script, but now I was writing it. And for the next, till I came in here, that's what I did. And I tried to write the script. And the script I had was, it was a nice one, you know, for me. Worked out well for me, or at least the plans of it worked out well for me. I didn't really care about how they were going to work out for you. Except for as it pertained to how it worked out for me. You know, self-centeredness to the core. But what happened over time, again, just being this taker, just constantly taking, always looking to take, trying to find things that were going to fulfill me. I looking back in retrospect, and I have to do this because I couldn't see it then, but I clearly see it now, that there was something that was in me that was calling for something deeper, that there was something that wanted something out of life that was going to make some sense. I wanted some purpose. I wanted some direction, and I wasn't getting that. And filling it up with the worldly things didn't do the trick either. You know, you can give an alcoholic $1 billion, right? And he's going to complain he's got to pay tax on it and drink. Right? It doesn't matter. You give him a supermodel and he's going to say, I want two. Or, you know, she's got the best man in the world. Well, he's better. It's just the way my mind worked as an alcoholic. Never satisfied. Always irritable. Always grumpy. Always dissatisfied with life. And that would always drive me back to the bottle. And when I took that first sip, and I've heard it described, and it's so true for me too, I didn't even have to drink it to start feeling that feeling. Just the idea that I was going to have that feeling that I was going to drink started the wheels in motion, you know. I started to feel better already once I knew that I was going to drink. And then when I put it into my system, it was a sense of enlightenment. It really was. It was like a spiritual awakening for me. It really felt right. Until it didn't work anymore, which for some of us that comes quickly. For some of us it takes a while before that really happens. But slowly, I've heard alcohol, it's a solvent, right? And it takes away. And that's exactly what happens to us. It starts taking away things. It takes away, for a lot of us, well, I guess it depends on what you hold most dear, right? That's usually maybe the last thing you hold on to. And for most of us, it's money related, because that's how we drink, right? So I'll lose everything, but I'll hold on to the job, or I'll get another job. But again, all that stuff, really, losing things can have and gain, and it didn't matter. As an alcoholic, what happens is we're going to drink. Right? Our first step tells us that. It says, no matter what happens, somehow, some way, I'm going to drink. And that was my case. As an alcoholic, still is. I still believe that 100%, that first step tells me that I am just as powerless over alcohol today as I was then. And really what it's telling me is I'm still powerless over that idea that I can satisfy that thing that I'm longing for inside with something other than what I found in here. Right? Be it drugs, be it alcohol, whatever it is, food, sex, you name it. We go down the gambit. And what happened was, again, looking back in hindsight, I was looking for something to fulfill me. That spirit inside of me was looking for a deeper purpose. And looked for it in booze and sex and all that stuff. Until I got into the program and started to work these steps, I was totally asleep to that. Once I started going through this process, I started to wake up and realize that, yes, this is it. I remember early on in life, I had some spiritual experiences, I guess I could call them now, again, looking back in hindsight. Didn't really recognize it as that, but I knew that it was something substantial. Or there was something there. But then, of course, you know, I turned my back on it, and drugs and alcohol and sex and all that became priority. But now I see that that was really what I was looking for the whole time. And I got that through Alcoholics Anonymous. My spirit was reawakened. It was reacquainted with God. My spirit recognized that there was something out there, but I didn't necessarily know how I was going to get it. I was adverse to, I don't know if that's the right word. I really had a problem with God because the things that I heard and what I heard through religion told me this. It said that you have to earn God's love, right? You have to earn that. And as far as I was concerned, I couldn't earn it because I was an ass. I wasn't a nice guy. I wasn't pleasant to be around. And so this God thing was not going to do his hocus pocus for me because I hadn't earned it, you know? So I really, right before coming here, I was reluctant, or coming in and hearing about the God thing, I was reluctant to turn my life over to it because I really didn't know what that entailed. I didn't know what the outcome was going to be. And again, I was convinced that I wasn't good enough to receive this gift. What I found was, even though towards the end, I would say, it's fair to say that I was a pretty big asshole. God didn't hold that against me. And I know a lot of you have heard this, but my sobriety really started at the end of a noose. Right? It got to the place where I could not take it anymore. Where my soul was so empty that I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't drink long enough to blot it out. There was going to be a sober time, and I dreaded that. I don't know if I dreaded the drink or the sobriety more at that point. It was just, it was a torturous way to live. So, of course, I lost my train of thought. My mind goes into bunny trails and it goes off. But anybody want to shout and say where I was?
Noose.
Thank you. Well, see, I needed a moment of levity. So, as a matter of fact, one of the guys the last guy I drank with is here. I'm very happy to see him here. He knows who he is, I think, because I'm staring at him. Thank you for that. But, all right, let's go back. So, and you can edit this, right? So there's like no pause and fussing in between. So, yeah, we got to make it sound good. Sip break. Since you're going to edit it, might as well. Okay. All right, so I get to the point where there's nothing but despair. There's nowhere to go anymore, right? I'm totally bankrupt. I have nothing left to give. And I want to die. I don't want to die, but I can't live the way I'm living. I can't suffer this torture anymore. I cannot be on this planet anymore because alcohol is not working. And I'm afraid to go to this God thing. And crying in my car with the noose around my neck, I just said, God, I can't do this anymore. And I really, sincerely meant it. I absolutely meant it. I surrendered at that moment. You know, up until that point, I was good at complying. A lot of us are, right? I'm very compliant when I need to be. I will comply with what I need to do in order to get done what I need to get done. As long as I know at the end of the road, I'm getting what I wanted to get. Right? So, you want me to be sober? Fine, I'll be sober. Okay? I'll be sober. You'll be sorry, but I'll be sober. I'll make you pay, you bitch. So I would stay sober. I would comply. I would comply with that wish. You know, I would comply with the boss. You want your job? Stop drinking for a little while. Get cleaned up. Okay, I'll clean up. You know, I'm complying, but never surrender. Never surrendering. And for me, it was because maybe I wasn't convinced. There was still this lingering thought that perhaps I can get away with this. Maybe I could do it right the next time. But there's not many places to go when you have a noose around your neck that you can fumble around in your mind that maybe there's option C. You know, you pretty much ran out of options at that point to get, when you're sitting there. You know, and that's where I was. And that's why the surrender was total. It was 100%, I quit. I'm done. I can't do this. I got to say, I again, just to really emphasize that, I am one defiant SOB. You know? I think that's a common trait in alcoholics and addicts. We're defiant. Even defiant against God, you know? That's how defiant I am. Yeah. Not afraid of you. And that's really, that was it. I went kicking and screaming. It was as long as I could, you know. I was the kind of guy, I tell you what, my brother, I have a big brother, he could bend my arm up until the back of my head and spin it around four times before I'd say, "Uncle, you're going to have to pull it off and beat me with it. I ain't saying, Uncle, uh-uh." You know, and that tenacity, that drive, that's the alcoholic drive. Uh-uh. I'm not stopping. No way. No way. I couldn't. And I'll tell you why. Why that was so strong and furious in me. Because I knew that there was no way I could survive on this planet without drinking. Because it was the only thing that made life make sense to me. So there I am sitting, noose, crying. On the way to the airport, we were listening to Fade to Black, and I wanted to turn to my son and say, "You know, this is the song I was listening to before I was ready to commit suicide." Didn't say that, but I was thinking it. Wasn't sure how that would have went over with him. But if you listen to the words, man, it was so fitting. You know, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't know. Just life isn't worth living anymore is basically what the song is saying. I have nothing left to give. And that's how I felt. I was a total zero. I was a zero. But you know what? That's the place that you need to be for God to do His stuff. You get to that place where you're zero, and then there's something that can be filled up. Right? And that's what I needed to do. The proverbial cup was knocked over and emptied out, and now there was room for the Spirit to fill me. And no, it wasn't Bill's experience, and I'm jealous because I didn't have that, and I thought I deserved it. But what happened, and what I'd love to give to anybody, if there's anything that I want to give to anybody, it's the gift of hope. There was a little glimmer of hope. If you have a pitch black room, and where I am, it gets pretty pitch black in Waxhaw. If you had a little pin dot of light, you'd be able to see it, and that's about what that was for me. There was a little pin dot of light of hope, a glimmer of hope. I remembered the alcoholic faces I saw at AA meetings that were smiling, and I wanted to punch their teeth in because happy. We're not a glum lot. I am. But I had that glimmer of hope. And what I did, I ended up in the mental ward, came out, and I was reacquainted with the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, instead of being compliant to get what it was, I want to also kind of mix this in. I don't know how I'll do this, but the gift that I'm talking about is a gift that has to be accepted. And for me, that mindset of do get, you know, I do, I get rewards. That's the way I work. That was my perception of God, was my perception of the way I live. It was compliance again. You comply with my wishes and I'll reward you, right? That was my warped idea of love. And even if you threw that in the mix, that God was love. Well, love to me is you do what I want, I give you affection. You don't, I don't. You know, swap. It was due. It's always cause and effect. And the idea of grace, being given a gift without merit, is so beyond the scope of anything that I could have ever imagined, because I can't handle that. I don't know if it's because I'm an alcoholic or a warped-minded human or whatever, but I cannot handle the idea of you giving me something that I haven't earned, or that I don't, that I think, that I don't think that I, whatever I'm trying to say. I couldn't accept that. It was very difficult to accept. And if you can't accept that, you're not accepting it. Right? And then you don't get it. And that's all that's required, is I need to accept this. Alcoholics Anonymous was, for me also, I'm a very heady guy. If you know me, you know I like to think. You know I like to analyze the crap out of things. I really like to pick things apart, right? And that's what I wanted to do with this program. That's what I wanted to do with God. I want everything to be in its neat little compartment. I want to understand it. I wanted you to give me the knowledge. And believe me, once I got this thing, it was like, okay, whew, I'm all in. I'm going to learn about Taoism. I'm going to learn about Buddhism. I'm going to learn about Catholicism, Judaism, this and that. I'll read the Bible backwards. What was the book? I'll read the book 20 times. I'll read the step book. And this is, you know, because I wanted to gain the knowledge that was going to really set me free. But what AA started to teach me was that that's not what's going to happen. we're going to present you with some principles, and we're going to give you some ideas, and we're going to remove things from you. Starting with that brain. They used to tell me, just put it on, you know, dummy up. And the removal process, I like to paint a picture of it, is my defects, my sins, my faults, whatever you feel comfortable calling them, are like a brick wall. And what I do during the step process is I see these bricks. They start to become apparent to me, right? And I need them removed. But I realize that they're too big for me. I don't have the power to get rid of them. But I need what's on the other side of that wall. And what's on the other side of that wall is the sunlight of the Spirit. And what I do is I ask my God to remove these bricks, right? Because I truly believe that God is not going to come and do it unless we want Him to. My God doesn't rape me. He doesn't come uninvited. He doesn't bust into my life. I must go to God and say, I accept you. I want you to do this. I need you in my life, right? And during this process, I have these things removed. The bricks are removed. And slowly the sunlight starts to penetrate. And I start to find freedom. And I start to find peace. And my whole definition of things starts to change. Happiness, which used to be contingent on you, my emotional needs being fulfilled, never happened, right? Never. I never get emotional fulfillment out of a person. It just doesn't happen because what happens is I depend way too much on you and you can't provide what I need, right? So that changed my perception of happiness. I thought maybe happiness is peace. Maybe it's tangible. Maybe peace is more tangible than things. Or maybe it's more permanent. Or maybe it's something obtainable. Maybe I can live by a set of principles that will bring about certain amounts of peace in my life. And the counterintuitive thing is that in order to find that peace, I had to give. Didn't make any logical sense to me. Again, because it was the taker, the thinker. But by giving, I've received so much. Love. My idea of love, my perception of love started to shift. Started to shift from that idea of owing, receiving, you know, I do for you, you do for me, and that's love. To a certain amount of, or a certain principles. Tangible principles. Principles that if I ask this power to come into me, I start to receive this gift of love and I'm able to express it. And the funny thing is, in my experience with this love, I don't have to like you necessarily in order to love you, right? I've boiled it down to certain principles. Compassion, right? Kindness, tolerance, patience, forgiveness, mercy. I was the total opposite of all these things. I had total apathy. I didn't care about you. I had no tolerance for you, no patience for you. Right? I had no patience for you. I had no tolerance. I didn't care about you. Compassion? I didn't even know what the hell that meant. Through this power, I started to wake up to these principles and understand them and study them. And started to implement them into my life, wanting to incorporate them into my life, wanting to live these principles and live this way of life. Because I found through experience that the more I lived in the principles of love, the more peaceful I became. And the external things didn't matter anymore. I didn't need you to make me happy. I didn't need you to fulfill me. I was being fulfilled. And then I can have a relationship. Right? When I don't require you to give to me to make me feel whole, I can give myself completely to you. And I don't require anything back from you. Not a thing. I can honestly say, based on these principles, I can unconditionally love every single one of you and not want anything back. But you know what? I walk through that door and I have Carol waiting on top of the stairs to give me a hug. And I got 40 hugs before I can even make it up here. And you all love me even though I'm dumb and came here late and thought I was getting here early. That's what happens. My idea of the universe, I'll quote Albert Einstein, you have to make an important decision in your life, right? Is this a hostile universe or a friendly universe? Well, it was a really hostile universe for me for a long time, because that's what I was putting out there. It was hostility. It was, I'm going to take. I want to get from you. And you perceive that. You're not dumb. You know I'm trying to manipulate you or butter you up or beat you up or whatever to get what I need, and you resist. And then I get pissed off and hurt. You know? So these principles of love, compassion, is very easy to come by in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because all I have to do, you suffer just like I did, right? So I can see that you're all, to a certain degree, lesser or more degree, suffering also. But compassion doesn't stop there, because that's just pity, right? If I see you and I feel sorry, yeah, well, Rachel's in pain, but that's all right, you know, poor Rachel. No. Compassion goes perfectly well with Alcoholics Anonymous because we believe in action. Compassion is the action behind the pity. I pick Rachel up, I feed her, I help her. That's what compassion is. I exercise that. And Alcoholics Anonymous knew that from the very beginning. What do? We throw you into action. Let's get you outside of yourself. Let's get you doing something else, you know? Let's get you to... It says in all our... After having this awakening, we want to practice these principles in all of our affairs. What principles are they? Principles that I've set out. Compassion, tolerance, patience, love, kindness, you know, all these things. So, if I can't be kind, I've learned not to be cruel, right? Can I at least manage not to do that? And, you know, sometimes I fall short. I'm still human. But that's okay. I've been around for a while, a little over 17 years, maybe 17 and a half years, and I've learned to accept my humanness. I've learned to say that, you know what, it's quite all right to be human, and I'm going to fall short. And that's just the way it goes. But what I do is I don't lament in it. I don't linger there. I say, all right, let's get out of this. And that's not because I'm smart. It's because that's what the program has taught me. You know, it says, let's do a 10th step. Let's see what this is. Let's see what's behind that. Why are you acting like this? And 9 times out of 10, it's because I've gone back to self, right? And you've affected that self somehow, right? And that self is always in a state of fear. I was always in a state of fear. When I'm in self, I'm always in a state of fear, because my past experience with self tells me that I'm not going to be able to measure up to what I need, right? And that's got to cause anxiety, right? If I know the outcome is going to be not good, I'm an alcoholic. I don't like when things don't feel good, right? So if I'm in a state of mind where I know that the problem at hand is not going to be solved properly, then I'm going to start experiencing some anxiety. Now, if I could put a face to that, you're in trouble. You know? That's where the resentment comes. If you're blocking me from what I need in order to make me happy in my sick mind, my alcoholic mind, well, we got a problem. And again, it's based on that fear. The fear that I'm not going to get something I think I need to make me happy, or I'm going to lose something I think that I need to keep me happy. Right? You're going to affect that somehow, some way. And it's going to cause anger and resentment. But when I came to this place through these spiritual principles, that fear started to fall away, because what I found is I've been freed of the reliance upon self. As long as I remain in the principles and I pray and I meditate, I can remain in that place, right? I can stay free of that fear because I'm relying on God instead of me. And God can do it, and I can't. I don't have to worry about my job, that you're going to take my job because he's smarter than me. I see him talking to the boss. I know that sneaky bastard's going to do something and I'm going to get fired. You know, I know he is. I know he's bad-mouthing me right now in that office with, you know. And I'm afraid, in that constant state of fear and anxiety. And then I hate you. And then I bring it home. And I get nasty with the wife because she said hello. What kind of shit is that? So now it's affecting my personal relations, right? It's affecting my sex life because she doesn't want to give it to me. So now I'm mad at that guy because now I didn't get any. So tomorrow when I see him, I'm going to punch him in the face. Meanwhile, he was probably asking for a day off. Who hell knows? But that's where fear drives me. Fear drives me, constantly drives me. And it's still, it encompasses my whole being in a matter of seconds. Right? My wife and I have a small business, and when things are going well, man, I'm spiritual. Hallelujah, praise the Lord. Let's go out to dinner. But when business is slow, man, let me tell you, fear just, bam, right in there. The first thing I do is I snap at her. It's your fault. You know? Now let's look behind the scenes. What's going on is I'm going to become poor, destitute. I'm going to be homeless. Colin's going to have a little can and he's going to shake it around and sell pencils. Holy schmoly, we're going to live in a cardboard box under the bridge. And this is where my mind takes me. And it takes me there. It's real to me. And I'm petrified. Right? Maybe it's real, maybe it's not. No, some of that stuff might have even happened. It hadn't happened to me, but it might happen to somebody. So I become afraid and my spirit gets disrupted. Right? And then I'm back in that mix. And then I'm vulnerable. And then suddenly can rear its face again. Right? Suddenly comes and jumps out at me and says, hey, you're going to be homeless. And then the drink starts, you know, I can't cope with this. I can't cope with life. I can't cope with big people problems. You know? Give me a drink. That's where I go. I need some kind of solution. And that's where I go. Right? Especially as a newcomer, that's where you're going to go. Boom, lightning fast. Suddenly appears, I go. What does it say? Suddenly tells me something. You know, she's hot. Have a drink. Okay. You're broke. Have a drink. I can't afford it. Shut up. You gotta love that suddenly. You know? Do a good deed. Have a drink. Doesn't matter, man. It's going to find me somehow, some way. My first step tells me. Suddenly he's waiting for me. Right? And if I don't see him, if I'm not ready for him, he's got me. He knows how to get me. It's my mind. It's not cunning and baffling. I've heard that so many times. Tape this. I want this. It's not cunning and baffling. My mind knows what it takes to get me to drink. And that's where it wants to take me. It's like I have this built-in enemy. You know? It wants me to go and drink. And it knows how to do it. Because it remembers. Portion. Okay? It remembers that feeling right before the feeling. You know? And that's where I want to get. That's where I want to be. I'm unrealistic. I have a spiritual experience. I want it to last forever. I want to stay on that pink cloud. I want to buy it. You know? Yeah, I'll take two of those guys. Make it a pink and a blue one. That's where I want to be. You know, it's not realistic. What is realistic is life happens. What happens is if we follow these principles, if we come to these meetings, if we fellowship, we start to find that we can handle these things as they crop up. We start to be able to manage life. Right? Not necessarily on my own power. I've tapped into a power far beyond mine. I've God on my side. I don't know what your God looks like, but my God's become pretty big. Right? Not going to knock over the chair. Don't want to offend anybody's God. But I'll tell you this. Your God better be strong enough. It better be as strong as your alcohol was. Because if that's what you're counting on, then he better be big. If you're me. Right? My God couldn't be a doorknob. Because I'll tell you what. Ain't going to stop me from drinking. My God can't be the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, maybe that's a good start. Maybe that'll give you something. They're more powerful than you physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever. But it ain't going to work for long. I need something that is so powerful, it can stop that drive. It can stop that insanity in my brain that tells me, you worthless piece of shit, die, go drink. Because that's what it wants me to do. That's what it drives. Constantly, boom, boom, boom. It's never off. Never off. 17 years in. What do? I get on the Long Island Railroad, just made it, proud of myself that I'm going to be here early and set up and go back to where we were. And I see this guy sitting there, and he's got a red head, like it's red inside of his head, and there's flakes on his shirt, and I'm thinking, ew, you're nasty. Yeah? I've judged him already. Boom. Yeah. Spiritual guy coming here, going to share about him. This is what I'm thinking. This is my alcoholism. I told you, I go on bunny trails. I want you to think about something. Ism. Ism. Think of the word ism. Anybody know what that means? Ism is a belief system. You have capitalism, you have socialism, communism, Catholicism, Protestantism, Judaism, alcoholism. What the hell is that? You don't have cancerism. You don't have diabetesism. What does that tell me in a roundabout way? This is of the brain. My brain ain't right. My brain thinks things. I'm holy one minute, the next minute I'm saying this guy's got flakes and he's disgusting and get out of here, you know? Spray his seat, man. Probably stinks too. You know? And I sit down and the other guy, he wants to sit in like parallel with me. Can't you see I'm taking up two seats? Jesus. This is where the sick alcoholic mind takes me. Instantly. That's another suddenly. Suddenly I have the right to judge. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't know if you probably judge me up here. I got flakes on my shirt too. They ain't from my head. Probably from that guy's head. But... I'm just kidding, man. But I want to illustrate how it never goes away. It's always there. And if I don't admit it, then I'm still sick. And I am. You know, we're all sick. We're all going to be sick. And you better remember that. And I'm saying that to myself. I better remember that. Because if my arrogance is the only thing stronger than my God, my ego, knock God right out. You know? So I need to remember. I need to be humble. I'll come in here. What am I going to say again? What can I say that hasn't been said? What can I do that hasn't been done? What can I talk about? Can I talk about starting a meeting? Ooh, the best meeting ever. What was I? An instrument. A lucky instrument. I was a lucky instrument. Be a part of something that saves lives, hopefully. What an amazing thing, man. That's the gifts. The gift that God gave me was not only to remove the obsession to drink, but the ability to love, right? And express that love. And as a group, that's the gift that we've all received, hopefully, and continue to receive, and continue to give freely, right? We don't charge for that. And that's an incredible gift. For lay people in groups, I've shared that a lot of people around this time think that it's such a magical, special time. And it is. It really is. And there's a good reason for that. Because this is the one time of year where a lot of us, even hardened criminals, will go out of their way to find that special somebody, that special present. And I can remember doing that for my son, now my other son, without any expectation of anything in return, right? I'm going to do this because I love them and I just want to see their face when they get this gift. And what I propose to you is that if you've had that experience, if you've felt that when you give somebody a gift, that feeling that it brings to you, you can have that indefinitely. This program offers that to us. I've experienced that over and over and over again. Whenever I sit with a sponsee and I go through this process, my spirit is so lifted. I'm able to experience this person's life being transformed right in front of my eyes. And it's miraculous. Of course, yes, there's tragedies too, but I want to just focus on the gift right now. And it is it's amazing because I just did a fifth step with a sponsee on last Friday, and I told him, You don't know how good I'll feel when I leave here. I'll be walking on a cloud. I don't know what your day is going to look like, but mine's going to be really good. And he couldn't believe it. It just didn't register with him. You know? But that's the truth. It's really the truth. I get so much more out of it than they are. I'm giving a gift, I suppose, from their perspective, but what I'm really taking, I'm getting. I really am. And I know that. Which brings me back to the sickness of the hour. You know, you can get caught up in that too. You know, it becomes very subtle. I got time, I'm getting when I know I'm going to get when I do this. So is that the thing that drives me? Maybe. Maybe it's a little sick and whatever. Maybe it's not. Maybe that's the way we were created to be. Right? That's a symbiotic relationship. It works out perfectly. We both get. What could be wrong with that? And I believe that if there was a creator, he would create that. You know, we'd both get something out of the deal. And that's exactly what happens. So I've received a tremendous amount in my sobriety. And I'm extremely blessed. I'm so proud and grateful to be part of this whole group, being instrumental in this group, being part of the group, watching it grow up as a group. And I'll tell you, I was very, very sad when I left. And I'm going to share this and then I'll close, I'll wrap it up. It was a very good learning experience for me having left, because I realized a couple of things. When I was here, obviously I know a lot of people, popular enough, you know, just like any of us that would come here. It's like Cheers, everyone knows your name. And I became very, unbeknownst to me, dependent on that. Right? And that's another subtle shift. And I didn't see that until I moved and I was away. And when I got into North Carolina, I didn't know anyone. Not a soul. And when I walked into those rooms, there wasn't a greeting, there wasn't a hug, there wasn't a handshake, there wasn't even a hello. Well, maybe the gratuitous AA hello. But nothing like I get here. And it hit me. It really did. And what I had to do was really, it was the ego thing, feeling important here. You know, it's Sean. Yeah, oh, yeah. Wow. You know? Wow. I'm nothing. You know? And there I am sitting as nothing again. And all I had to rely on was my God. And was he going to be strong enough to pull me through this one? All I could do is base it on my past experience and my, you know, that brings up faith and say, yes, God, I believe. Although I'm in a tremendous amount of pain and I miss my fellowship, I miss my people. I miss my meetings. I miss what I was hearing there. I miss the energy that this group pumps out. Where did that energy come from? Whose energy was that? Is that energy acceptable? Accessible. Not acceptable. I love you, Rob. Is that energy and power accessible anywhere? Or do I have to be in a certain place and do a certain thing to get it? Did it subtly go back to that old insane idea that I'm going to make this happen? That I was somehow the provider of all this? Where the group was? You know? So I get quiet and I pray and I get humble. And I'm humbled again. And God teaches me a lesson again. And he shows me again, I'm here for you. You don't always believe it and you don't always see it, but I'm always here for you. And he always shows me that. And that to me is just, I've never deserved it. I have sponsees that ask me, do I deserve this? I don't know. Look at you. You're an ass. Spent 4 hours listening to what an ass you are. No, you don't deserve this. Shit. But you're going to get it. You're going to get it anyway. And that's what God always shows me. I do this for you, Sean, because I am who I am, not because who you are. And that's pretty humbling, man. That'll take the wind right out of your ego. But, again, I've just been tremendously blessed. My life has been one big blessing after another. And I choose to see that right now. When I leave here and life happens, maybe I'll forget. But overall, by and large, I remember that. And I really thank you for whoever set up and all the greeters and just everybody who got this together tonight, and I am so happy to see you all. I wanted to come early because I wanted to see people and hug people and talk. And if anybody's got time after, and you know, I think we're going to go and do something after, I hope, and spend more time with you, because that's what I came here for, to just suck it out of you. All right. I know, delete that part. I know where some of you crazy, sick-minded people are going with that. But God, I love you all. I really do, from the bottom of my heart. And I don't mean that in a mushy way. I mean that, and I'll do anything it takes to help you, because I want you to walk on this path with us, kind of a way. You know, not sentimental. It's real. So, thank you all for letting me share. And happy anniversary to the group. I believe we have a cake I saw coming out. And hopefully we'll enjoy each other's company for a little while before we have to go. So thank you very much.